Kill radio dot org. Okay, everybody, put down your beer bongs and your crack pipes. It's time to press your ears up against the speakers. It's the Impressionistic News for Thursday, May 26th, 2005. Gee, I don't even know what I'm going to do today. I went to a meeting of the Revolutionary Communist Party people regarding Bob Avakian's new autobiography from Ike DeMau. And, you know, I didn't get anything. I couldn't find... I recorded some stuff, but none of it was very interesting. So I ended up going, what the hell am I going to do for my news hour today? Well, I guess you're about to find out. So this is Kill Radio in Los Angeles, just like the Loop said. And this is where I grab things from all over the place and put some of my own spin on it. And that way, it's for you. It's for all of you out there, around the world, in the kitchen, making tea. And, well, let's see what happens. North Korea needed food. Walmart announced that it would export $18 billion worth of Chinese goods. And researchers in Singapore developed a system that allows people to pet chickens over the internet. This is the Weekly News and Review, posted May 24th, 2005, by Paul Ford on the Harpers.org website. And I'm your faithless host, Bennett, prouder than ever to say faithless host, for killradio.org and the Impressionistic News. Pakistan was working to stop bear baiting. China put a halt to the practice of using naked women for plates in sushi restaurants. And Warren Beatty was wondering whether he should run for governor of California. New York was reviewing a law that allows convicted rapists to obtain Viagra through Medicaid. And a parachutist died in a fall from the Eiffel Tower. Kylie Minogue announced that she has breast cancer. British MP George Galloway went to Washington, D.C. to respond to allegations that he profited from the UN-managed Iraq Oil for Food program. I met Saddam Hussein exactly the same number of times as Donald Rumsfeld met him, said Galloway. The difference is that Donald Rumsfeld met him to sell him guns and to give him maps the better to target those guns. Before he testified, Galloway called journalist Christopher Hitchens a drink-soaked former Trotskyist popinjay. Ha ha ha. G.W. Bush vowed to veto any bill that eases funding restrictions on stem cell research. And Donald Trump called on New York City to rebuild the Twin Towers only taller and described the city's planned Freedom Tower as the worst pile of crap architecture I have ever seen in my life. In Britain, Ford Motor Company suspended 7 workers when they were caught looking at woman-on-octopus pornography on company computers. Management, said an employee, didn't see the funny side. A professor of biology at Indiana University claimed that the female orgasm was only for fun, and Laura Bush went to Jerusalem, where she wore a black pantsuit and black shawl to the Dome of the Rock and the women's section of the Western Wall. We commit ourselves, she said, to reject hatred and to teach tolerance and live in peace. She was heckled by both Muslims and Jews. I still say that just like the picture of Saddam Hussein in his underwear last week, somebody should get some revealing pictures of Laura Bush in her underwear or sitting on a toilet or something else. On the same day that Laura was visiting Jerusalem, Ariel Sharon visited New York City, where he was also heckled by Jews. In Chile, Augusto Pinochet's doctors claimed that Pinochet had suffered a stroke. Human rights lawyers said he was just being wily. Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez said he might break diplomatic ties with the United States if the U.S. did not hand over Luis Posada Carolis, a former CIA employee who was accused of blowing up a Cuban airplane in 1976, killing 73 people. An avalanche in the Andes killed 41 Chilean soldiers, and in West Virginia, a 1,500-pound camel sat on a woman as she painted a fence. Near Seattle, Mary Kay Letourneau, 43, married, what's-his-name, 22, whom she first raped when he was 12. And a California man was arrested because he lived in a tent for 2 weeks in order to buy tickets to the new Star Wars movie. His doing so violated a requirement that, as a sex offender, he let police know if he changed lodgings. It turned out that a grenade that landed 100 feet away from GW during a recent speech in Russia, Georgia, was not a training device, but had simply failed to work. Georgian officials offered an $11,000 reward for information leading to an arrest. In Bolotnikovo, Russia, a lake disappeared. People in Zanzibar were living in fear of a sexually rapacious, sodomy-prone goblin named Popobawa. And Dr. W. David Hager, the G.W. Bush appointed advisors to the FDA and a vocal opponent of emergency contraception, abortion, and premarital sex, was accused by his ex-wife of anally raping her on a regular basis over many years. Hager is the author of the books As Jesus Cared for Women and With His Wife, Stress, and the Woman's Body. In Texas, a 5-year-old brought a loaded gun to his pre-kindergarten class. And in Indiana, a 3-year-old boy crawled inside a toy vending machine at a Walmart and had to be freed by firemen. He did not receive a toy. The Bush administration continued to criticize Newsweek for telling the truth that U.S. soldiers had desecrated the Koran. People need to be careful what they say, said Donald Rumsfeld. Our United States military personnel go out of their way, said White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, to make sure that the Holy Koran is treated with care. Since the Newsweek story broke, many other cases of Koran desecration over the last 2 years have emerged. Apparently, in addition to putting the Koran in the toilet, guards have urinated on it, trampled on it, put it in a urine bucket, and allowed a dog to carry Islam's holiest book in its mouth. Newspapers published photos of Saddam Hussein standing in his underwear, shuffling around and sleeping. The photos may violate the Geneva Convention, which prohibits outrages upon personal dignity. That's why it should be done to Laura Bush. And some people question whether the photos could incite further violence in the Middle East. I don't think a photo inspires murders, said President Bush. Of course, what does he know? Hussein threatened to sue. Senators compromised on filibusters, and a new kind of monkey was discovered in Tanzania. It communicates in honking barks rather than in whoop gobbles. In Georgia, a businessman named Hubert Johnson agreed to take down a large stuffed monkey that was hanging from a crane outside his drilling business. The message to the workers is, don't monkey around with safety, said Johnson. Even though the monkey had its hands and face painted black and was draped in a Confederate flag. In Houston, large black grackles swooped down from magnolia trees to attack passersby, including a lawyer. And a man from Holland was being tried on charges that he killed his mother, skinned her, dressed her up in her skin, and then went out to direct traffic and recite Bible verses. He loved her so much, said his lawyer. In Iraq, 16 people were killed when a car bomb exploded outside a restaurant. At least 12 people were killed in other attacks. Iraq's unemployed were selling their organs at cut rates, and American funeral homes were earning frequent flyer miles every time they shipped a corpse. That's it for the weekly news of the 26th of May, 2005. This is Kill Radio. Thanks, friends, for listening.
One to go.
The sun on the meadow is summery warm. The stag in the forest runs free. But gather together to greet the storm. Tomorrow belongs to me. The branch of the linden is leafy and green. The Rhine gives its gold to the sea. But somewhere a glory awaits unseen. Tomorrow belongs to me. The babe in his cradle is closing his eyes. The blossom embraces the bee. But soon, says I,
that's from Cabaret, the movie soundtrack. And I use it as an introduction to thinking about ideology. We live in a country where most people think that they have no control. Tomorrow belongs to me. People think they have no control over what happens. They think that everything happens because it's a given. That girls are for pink and boys are for blue. They think that everybody is naturally a heterosexual. But if you begin to look around you, you quickly see that everything that is contained within something bigger, all embracing assumptions, values, ideas available from the culture. Now, the culture means what's happening this week, but it goes back to the dawn of the human race. Beneath the idea that all of us can't control our own destinies, that things are larger than us, it lies an assumption that we are all slaves or prisoners of an existing ideology, that we have no control or responsibility nor the power of decision, that everything we do, say, or write is determined. Language is ideology made concrete, and the language controls us. It seems true to me that we cannot live without ideology. If by ideology I mean the human need to formulate ideas about and attitudes to life, relationships, attitudes that will be inevitably influenced positively or negatively by by the attitudes already available within the culture or available from other cultures with which we have access. In this sense, ideology would appear to be one of the major phenomena that distinguish us from, say, animals. I presume my cat Max doesn't have a defined ideological position, although he does have opinions about certain basic things about when I'm going to get up and when he's going to eat. And if we cannot live without or outside of the ideology, this does not make us its slaves. I can choose my ideological position, unlike my cat. The combined facts that I know must have a position, and that many different positions are available to make possible choices. The choices will, of course, be determined by many factors, but the more I become aware of those factors, and that's what Kill Radio is here for, and aware of the positions that are available, the more responsible we shall all be for our own decisions. Yesterday I went to this thing down at the library for Bob Avakian's new book, and I've already determined that I have real problems with the RCP approach. They're Maoists, and they seem to think that Mao is a hero who did many great things. He stopped the famine, was what I was told. No, I don't know which famine they're talking about, because 10 million people roughly died in China between 58 and 63 during the period that's called the Great Leap Forward. And from the information I have, Mao wasn't much of a farmer, because he told the farmers to plant their seeds closer together, which is not a very good idea. And he told the farmers that sparrows were the villains. So he recommended that the farmers go out and kill all the sparrows. Now Mao, you know, he did good things. He wrote good poetry, but writing good poetry doesn't make you a tremendous person. You know, it has little to do with one to do with the other. What I heard last night was a bunch of praise for Bob Avakian, because he's been through it all. But he came out of the Ike 50s, and the 50s was an amazing time period in this country. I mean, it was, yes, there was this sort of golf-playing president, repressive atmosphere where you didn't mention things. Homosexuals didn't exist, or they went to prison, and nobody did drugs, and, you know, and all that was under control. But seething under the surface of the 50s was what became the 60s. Their rock and roll was invented in the 50s. The beat poets came out in strong force. The homosexual movement, which had solidified during World War II, when suddenly lots of people packed together in cities and suddenly people recognized each other within a crowd, was growing in strength during the 50s. The 50s were a time that we all, you know, if you went through the 50s, I'm too young to have lived. I was born in the 50s, but I did not live during that time period, or I wasn't adult during that time period. But if you were part of that, if you lived in that world, then you were affected by it. So the fact that Mr. Avakian was affected by it, I'm sure his individual thing, by the way, I should read the book, but I'm sure his individual impressions were just as valid and interesting as other people, but that alone doesn't make the book worth hearing. The Maoists, the RCP people that I talk to, who are very nice people, aren't really revolutionaries. They want to foment revolution, but they have no platform. They have no plans for what to do with revolution. Now, what I'm going to do here is, since I didn't get anything, you know, other than urges that you should read the book, I'm going to play. I got these three discs of Bob Avakian talking about religion. All right. So let's listen to, I'm going to do a cut up of all three discs to see if there's anything I can find, because I didn't find it when I was surrounded by fans. So maybe the man himself can tell me something. And of course, if I'm wrong, please write to me at chillroom@killradio.org and tell me what's wrong with anything that I've just said. Okay? Mao was a dictator. Here's the thing. Communism, in order to... The basic idea inside it is that in order to have change, you need the masses. You need the proletariat to uprise. But they have to be scientifically taught what is right. So therefore, during a time of revolution, there's going to be chaos. How do we get out of chaos? Communism puts forth dictatorship. They don't call it dictatorship, they call it leaders. But I see repressive regimes where art is not... Well, actually, the 20s, Lenin was... There was great art that came out of Russia in the 20s, but that had to do with the time around the world. In Berlin and Paris and New York, there were amazing things going on in the art world. So Russia had to keep up with that, especially because Lenin was different than what came later, Mr. Stalin. You don't find... Lenin listed as a major murderer, even though he was. The Stalin, whatever the responsibility, there were untold millions of people died. It was not like Hitler, where Hitler wanted to remove a particular group of peoples from particular groups of peoples from the earth. But there was an awful lot of death, and the same for Mao, 10 million at least. And the same for the smaller despotic groups. How many thousands of people were enemies of Castro were killed? At least 33,000, something like that. And look at the more horrible things that happened recently, like on Pol Pot in Cambodia. I mean, wow. So here's somebody who espouses communist ideas, who thinks that they're superior to what exists. And here he is talking about the thing that we've been getting shoved at us from the neocons and the religious right here, religion. So, of course, I have to say I have to agree with many of the things he says. That's why it's so interesting. Right? So I'll shut up. I've talked too much. Here's Bob Avakian.
Thank you. Well, I'm very happy to be here to discuss this important subject with all of you. I was trying to think about how to get into this subject and develop this talk, and I thought maybe I could just boil the whole thing down to a really great line from a not very good movie. The movie is called The Big Bounce. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it's not a very good movie, a crime caper movie, you know, with this con men, and they're all trying to outsmart each other. And at one point, one of the characters played by Owen Wilson, you may know him, he's a guy with blonde hair and sort of a funny nose. And he's talking to a character played by Morgan Freeman, who's a corrupt judge in Hawaii where the movie takes place. And they're discussing how to run a con, and at a certain point, Owen Wilson's character says, "Yeah, but what about all these problems we're going to run into? How are we going to deal with that?" And Morgan Freeman says, "Well, we just have to have faith." And Owen Wilson says, "You mean like in God?" And Morgan Freeman's character says the great line, "God is just an imaginary friend for grown-ups."
So a lot of the beginning of the Quran, particularly where it talks about the creation and all that, is modeled after the Jewish scriptures. And Islam looks to Abraham as a big patriarch also. So... You know, there are material reasons why people adopted these different religions.
Among their own people. They're not the leaders that get on the television and go to the White House and openly say it.
There was these trading classes.
But we should say to them, well, which is it?
Trade that was going through Mecca.
One way or the other, motherfuckers. Either you believe the word of God and every word is
beyond the different tribal divisions.
In order to be more effectively able to carry out. If you're not going to uphold this shit, then admit that you don't believe that every word should be upheld. And this
cannot be. And some of the religious things they use in their religious ceremonies.
Lost them.
So you get a whole display about the
some other religion, maybe like Islam, would have emerged, but it wouldn't have been exactly the same religion if Muhammad had been defeated in military battle with the authorities in Mecca and had
been. It's been very hot in the news these days.
The reason I'm going into all this is
the whole thing of gay marriage with the Christian fascist and Sicilius from the president on down, that marriage is, as they say, only between one man and one woman. The Bible tells us so.
They're not some divinely
inspired. Oh, really?
But the reason I say,
well, let's look at the Bible. For example, Jacob, as we know, from Genesis 29 and 30, was married to both Rachel and Leah. So he had more than one wife. That wasn't simply a marriage between one man and one woman.
Mexico.
He said there's a discussion in Deuteronomy 29,
pointing to the Aztec side. If those people had one instead of these other people, the Spanish, you'd be worshiping those gods instead of this one.
And then you bring out what we do need.
And this gets to something very...
So I think it's going to be an ongoing struggle. I mean, I'm talking about different things you can do, but this is not going to be... you know, if somebody's going to be won and lost in a day, you know? This is an ongoing struggle. But I do think you have to take the offensive. And you have to not let them slide or cheat. You know, you got to pinpoint the contradiction and say, look, one way or the other here. And then I think you can proceed from there.
21:10-17. Hello. Thank you for.
Or if you look at 1st and 2nd Chronicles, which chronicles all the supposed great kings and bad kings of Israel and Judah, you will see that the greatest king of all, David, had more than one wife, and besides that, he had hundreds of concubines.
The Christian cross.
Now let's be clear.
Spanish
David is not condemned.
Has been very much in the news and the culture lately because there's been this whole movie. By Mel Gibson, The Passion of the Christ, the whole crucifixion of Jesus with the cross as the symbol, on and on with the blood and everything else. But here's a question we're thinking about. Why is the cross associated with Jesus a big symbol in this society, and the crucifixion of Jesus a big symbol in this society, but the crucifixion of Spartacus not a big symbol in this society. Not a big fact in this society. In fact, many people, maybe some of you here, don't know who I'm referring to when I talk about Spartacus. Spartacus was a slave who led a rebellion of slaves in the Roman Empire less than a century, about 80 years before Jesus, that threatened the Roman Empire to its foundations before it was finally drowned in blood. And as a result of its being defeated, Spartacus and all of his followers were crucified on crosses, lining the main road from Rome.
Don't feel a complete necessity to force religion back into schools more the way it was before the 60s. But there is a definite struggle going on. And one of the big fronts of this struggle, by the way, is this whole thing over evolution. And I think that this is a very important battle to take up. I mean, this really reminds me of the whole thing with the church and Galileo. You know, several hundred years ago, you know, the view of the church was that, you know, straight out of the Bible, that the earth was the center of everything. All the heavens, as they were called, were created for the benefit of man on earth. Man was God's highest creation. And then, of course, there were within man, within the society of man, there were hierarchical relations with the church authorities and the, you know, the political authorities on the top. And the big landowners were on the top, and they were all the way down to the bottom with the poor people and the peasants and so on. And this was a very highly ordered view of a universe where everything had its place, as I was referring to. When Copernicus came along about 400 or 500 years ago and started recognizing that the earth was not the center of everything, that in fact it revolved around a sun, and that there was much more out there besides just the sun, for that matter. And when Galileo, you know, came along and supplied certain proofs of this, this challenged the whole order of society that the church was a key part of upholding. And they actually forced Galileo to recant,
the Old Testament,
to take back his proofs.
And they began promoting this idea that actually got to very humorous and ridiculous lengths. A sort of an illustration of the combination of very modern technology with very backward Dark Ages ideas. They were all getting their cell phones and their pagers out as he was approaching his death, waiting to find out if Rabbi Schneerson was going to finally announce that he was, after all, the Messiah. So here we have this really ridiculous and strange scene.
And so priests came in, you know, to exorcise the devil. And it was a long, drawn-out struggle. And Richard Pryor said the movie would have been a lot shorter and simpler if it had been the black preacher doing it. Because as a black preacher, they got a direct pipeline to God. He said, you know, the black preacher would say, you know, God, there's a poison here that's possessed. And I was wondering, I know you're busy. I checked your schedule. But the devil's just acting a motherfucking fool.
And I was wondering if you could exercise this motherfucker to Cleveland someplace. And that would be the end of it. Well, you know, there's a humorous side of this, and we all laugh about it, and I enjoy that routine as much as anybody. But there's also a very serious side to this shit. Just recently in the news, there was a story about these religious fundamentalists in Detroit who killed this young boy who has autism, a mental disorder, because they believed from the Bible that he was possessed by a demon, and they sat on him and suffocated him, trying to get the demon out of him. And people who are, you know, one to oppose evolution are doing it on the basis of society's going to hell. You know, everything is, they don't care whether evolution is true or not. They want to try to argue that it's not, but really what they're about is everything that used to make life orderly and acceptable is being shaken up by the idea that there's no God ruling over all this and that human beings are just a process of this evolution. Well, there's actually nothing to be afraid of in this. In other words, so what if we just evolve through these processes? Here we are, and we're going to make out of our society what we can make out of it. You know, and the mysteries of the universe and the quest to understand more is no less important just because it wasn't created by some God. There's still plenty to learn. And plenty.
Everybody's laughing because I always like to talk about the Mormons. But they're good for illustrating a lot of things. Now, the Mormons believe that 500 years before Jesus...
Well, let's remember, ran for president himself in 1988 in the Republican Party. Pat Robertson is quoted in this book as saying, when people get sick of all this moral decay and degeneracy and the way in which society is falling apart because of its sins, then we'll take over. And it's not just the rantings of a few lunatics. Sometimes people don't want to face up to this and they say, oh, this is just the rantings of a few lunatics. Well, these lunatics include George Bush, Tom DeLay, who's the most powerful member of Congress, one of the most powerful judges in the Supreme Court, Antonin Scalia, as well as Bush and Ashcroft.
Indicates that what you previously believed was wrong.
But
this is very exciting. You know, there's no lack of excitement.
Have their hands on the levers of power. To understand reality. Let's recall Napoleon's statement from earlier about the role of religion and how it enforces oppressive relations and justifies them. And given the stakes of what's up in the world today and what's been unleashed by this whole what we call a juggernaut, a rolling monster of war and repression that's brought us the war in Iraq and the Patriot Act and all these other things, think about the seriousness of what it means that people who believe in this and want to enforce this are this, you know, much involved in the exercise of power in this society. Now, a concentrated example of this is the question of evolution.
Kids anymore. And look, there is a lot of bullshit out there, let's be honest, you know. You put on MTV or BET and watch these rap videos, I'm sorry, man, it's just like, a lot of it is just very mildly, and not so mildly, softcore pornography. And degradation of women, I'm sorry, because that's what the powers that be promoted. They didn't promote Fight the Power. They didn't promote some of the earlier stuff, you know, like the message from Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel. They promoted this stuff
because it's an essential point to get into, that people believe these things and assume they're true because this has been, they've been indoctrinated with this, it's been ingrained into their mind, all the workings of society that they're in work to reinforce the idea that this is the truth, and then you grow up within it just assuming that this is the way the world is. And if you're in another part of the world, you don't believe Jesus is the Messiah. You believe he was a prophet and that Muhammad was the last prophet and Islam is the true religion.
More than 99.9% of sciences in biology as well as other sciences plainly accept the fact that evolution is a proven reality.
You know, they took God out of the classroom. And if there really were a God, could anybody really take God out of the classroom?
Most people don't even know this. And they're preyed on, they're kept in ignorance, and then their ignorance is used to get them to act against their own interests, to keep them from really understanding the world.
And therefore, being able to change it, to understand why they're in the conditions that they're in and what can be done about this. Instead, we get people like
this. And this is a society that's full of a lot more uncertainty than it used to be.
You know, Tom DeLay gets up.
Used to be like, you know, you say you got a job in a steel mill, well, your kid could get a real child could get a job in a steel mill and so on and so forth. And if you were in a managerial position, you could make a lot of money and you could have a lot of job security. And now you can make $1 million in a few years and be out on your ass.
General Jerry Boykin, who said,
people who have not yet developed or who have been denied access to such a scientific approach.
Because my God is a real God, and this
or people
God
who have resisted and
God.
Rejected such a scientific
approach. George Bush, didn't win the popular vote, but he's in the White House because God wanted him there. Now, this is a person who commands a major part of the U.S. military. This is how serious this shit is. This is the way the ruling class of this society is moving. So an insistence on a literal and absolutist interpretation of the Bible or the Quran or the scripture and traditions of any of the world's major religions can only lead to upholding and enforcing oppression and torment of the most horrendous kind, as I've been discussing.
I know, it's not fair of me to do what I just did, playing three different speeches at once that sort of wrap around each other. I know, it's not fair at all. I'm not ridiculing, because did you hear anything in there that you plainly disagree with? Maybe his comments about rap music, I don't know. But, the dominant ideology is trying to force itself into us. It's indoctrinating us. I mean, we agree with that. But do you hear, beyond just turning on, do you hear any kind of agenda beyond, you know, we know how bad things are. At least I think we do, don't you? This is from the Herbalizer.
Maximum effect in absolutely every single facet of the gem, including but not limited to the pursuit of truth, which has been unduly smoothed over, made soothing to those who have been doing the polluting. In fact, we wrote some raps. Now I have here in my chest an outline, a list, a platform, manifesto, a mandate from intro to outro. It's absolutely rock solid from the bottom to the top and the top to the bottom. Here's our outlook and how it breathes. Number one, let's see. Don't believe in other people thieving the ideas that our cerebrums cultivate and create, but if you're stealing them, now that's a calculated mistake. A combination infinite evolving digitized code you can't break. We believe in unconditional control, not under supervision of another upper layer. So what that means is our beliefs, our boundaries shall all be balanced properly without restriction, limitation, or revoke. Point three, we don't believe in you controlling we. That's point three. I'm not obligated to listen to shit you telling me. That's the type of thing that could lead to a felony. I don't give up, you're yelling at me at the top of your lungs. You do it, otherwise it isn't going to get done. I hold the reins to my tongue and decide when to close and open the door. The point four, you've been warned. So before we move on, just from point four on, just so you don't distort the order, make us go back and forth once more. Let's repeat what we've recorded thus far. Now point one, we don't believe in other people thieving the ideas that our cerebrums cultivate and create. Make no mistake, point we believe two. In unconditional control of our beliefs and our opinions, our souls, our growth, and our dominion. Point we three, we don't believe in you controlling we. I'm not obligated to do or say or listen to a goddamn thing. A point four.
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 Now point four.
We believe in all of the above just for the reasons given. Upliftment, upliving, not giving up. Setting government and loving it. So we self-sufficient, not tripping off of that subliminal stuff. We not submitting, coming with it rough and tough. We gonna supplement your knowledge with a substance. We not gonna let an opportunity get left out. We not gonna let some indecision stop what we about. We not gonna show no mercy. Overflowing the drought. It's no doubt, no doubt.
It's no doubt,
no doubt.
It's no doubt,
no doubt.
It's no doubt,
no doubt.
It's no doubt, doubt, no doubt. Cause this is what it's about. Come on, we believe in achieving the summit as expected. Detonate the avalanche effect. We bust around and watch a series of events connect. The chain reaction set off like a fusion experiment in which we can calculate and document the elements and their effects with patience. Put it all down in scientific notation. This is like a laboratory report of sorts, research results, a layout of our findings and methods at work. Here is our agenda, an easily defensible census of live ammunition. Five bullet point five. We believe in looking alive and recognized by the makeup of our character, eyes, by our merits and vibes. That is indistinguishable in appearance, but it's equal keepers of the inextinguishable fire. We don't believe in a quick fix to live in. It's a constant routine of maintenance and adjustment. What's in? You gotta keep it jumping, pumping, bumping, saying something before your severance ascend the point seven. It's seven's a reflection of our beliefs and histories, events, unpleasantries, and pestilence, disease, insensitivity, as reference to be seen, as lessons, a series, a test, and a complete testament to our team in strength as a means of success. So as a team, take that. Point eight, just to set it straight. Before we get too far up out of the gates and go astray, let's recap the way we came to that great point eight, like fate, and tell the fake why they can't create. Point one, no bite. Point two, I'm right. Point three, you ain't. Point four, point four. Point five, recognize. Point six, make adjustments. Point seven, is a testament. Point eight, go on, set it now. We believe in all of the above, just for the reasons given. Uplifting, upliving, not giving up. Setting government and loving it, so we self-sufficient, not tripping off of that subliminal stuff. We not submitting, coming with it rough and tough. We gonna supplement your knowledge with a substance. We not gonna let an opportunity get left out. We not gonna let some indecision stop what we about. We not gonna show no mercy, overflowing the drought. There's no doubt, 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 no doubt. Now we believe in all of the above, just for the reasons given. Up, living, not giving up. Setting government and loving it, so we self-sufficient, not tripping off of that subliminal stuff. We not submitting, coming with it rough and tough. We gonna supplement your knowledge with a substance. We not gonna let an opportunity get left out. We not gonna let some indecision stop what we about. We not gonna show no mercy, overflowing the drought. There's no doubt, 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 and we out.
And this is Bennett, and this is the Cannabis Corner here on KILL Radio, Los Angeles. Without laws prohibiting the use of drugs, there would be no cause for a drug war. The evolution of drug laws in America is a bizarre story, making for interesting thinking. The first drug law passed in America was the direct result of prejudice. In 1875, Chinese men were targeted for opium use. The law didn't prohibit the sale or trade of opium, made no reference to the importing of opium, and didn't restrict the use of opium as a medicine. In San Francisco, smoking opium was outlawed because white men were afraid that white women were being corrupted by Chinese men. Specifically, white men didn't want white women in opium dens. Since opium was valued as a medicine and smoking opium seemed to be preferred by the Chinese, the law was constructed so as to have the major impact solely on the Chinese. This xenophobic approach to a perceived drug problem wouldn't end in San Francisco. The Harrison Act was written to ensure doctors and pharmacists that prescribed the drug were licensed. Regulating what a person could ingest was seen as an infringement on constitutional rights. By requiring a license to distribute the opium and cocaine, the government could control the drug by making the licensing procedure difficult or impossible and inherent with risk. Cocaine was targeted in the Harrison Act because of widespread fear that blacks became violent and wanton and would rape white women while under the influence of the drug. No evidence was ever given to support these fears. The Harrison Act was effective because the agencies that had the authority to grant a license to distribute opium or cocaine never planned to issue any. The penalty for distributing the drugs without a license was severe. The same prejudice responsible for laws regulating cocaine and opium was now turned to another race. The Mexican population that exploded in border towns during the Depression was now seen as a nuisance. The fact that these workers used a drug known as marijuana wasn't lost on the bureaucrats or newspaper editors with an axe to grind. All sorts of lurid stories appeared connecting violent crimes committed by Mexicans to marijuana use. Soon all the minorities were placed under this new drug microscope, and marijuana was viewed as the connecting factor. With the passage of the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937, the war on marijuana had begun.
What about the current war on marijuana and drugs? In the year 2000, 1,579,566 arrests were made in the United States for drug abuse violations. Of these arrests, 5.6% were for marijuana sales and manufacturing, and 40.9% were for possession. That equates to 646,042 arrests in the year 2000 for the possession of marijuana. By the way, for the record, they keep telling us, the government keeps telling us that the number of people using marijuana is declining as time goes by, when this just simply isn't what the numbers actually show. For instance, there were 1,222 metric tons of marijuana seized in 2000, whereas there were 1,094 metric tons seized in 1999. In other words, there were more tons seized in 2000 than in 1999. And yet, we all know that since marijuana is so easy to get, that no matter how much they seize, that's just a tiny blip of a percentage of how much is being used. And since earlier on this news hour, I did mention Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City. Let's not forget that he was asked if he had ever tried marijuana. And his answer was, "You bet I did, and I enjoyed it." Oh, he's taken back those comments and said that he believes that he doesn't think that decriminalizing marijuana is a good idea, yada yada. But he did say, "You bet I tried marijuana, and I enjoyed it." With that, that's Kill Radio's Cannabis Corner for this week.
What's his name? Frank Galloway? This is a report from the BBC about Mr. Galloway's testimony the other day, which I thought was so cool.
I swear the testimony you're about to give before the subcommittee is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to you guys.
The charges, then, that Mr. Galloway and his charity had received vouchers for 20 million barrels of oil from Saddam Hussein in return for supporting his regime. This is what the senators got in return.
I know that standards have slipped over the last few years in Washington, but for a lawyer, you're remarkably cavalier with any idea of justice. You traduced my name around the world without ever having asked me a single question, and you call that justice.
The Honourable Member for Bethnal Green and Bow was sounding more like Braveheart, especially when questioned about his dealings with Saddam Hussein.
I've met Saddam Hussein exactly the same number of times as Donald Rumsfeld met him. The difference is, Donald Rumsfeld met him to sell him guns.
Stinging stuff, but nothing compared to the venom that was about to be unleashed. They had given him a platform, unwittingly perhaps, and he used it.
Senator, in everything I said about Iraq, I turned out to be right, and you turned out to be wrong. And 100,000 people have paid with their lives, 1,600 of them American soldiers, sent to their deaths on a pack of lies. Senator, this is the mother of all smokescreens.
After just 45 minutes, the browbeaten senators were left with one charge, that a close friend and Jordanian businessman had ploughed illicit Iraqi funds into Mr. Galloway's charity.
I did not ask Mr. Zurika which part of his profits from his entire business empire he was making donations to our...
That wasn't my question. My question was, would it trouble you if you found that out? And no. It's okay. You're not going to answer it. It's clear to me. I want to go to my next question.
All right. All right.
Hearing over, the senators rattled and not convinced.
It was unusual.
Did you get the best argument?
It wasn't a contest of getting better. You know, our purpose was to simply make a record. I think that Mr. Galloway's credibility is certainly very, very suspect. And if, in fact, he lied to this committee, then there'll have to be consequences to that.
And that could mean at least a year in jail for lying to Congress under oath. America had not heard of George Galloway. They have now.
Culture Wars Update, May 2005. So here we are at the end of a television season, beginning of the summer season for movies, the culture. Oh, and an American Idol is about to decide between some country singer and some guy with really bad hair who...
I prepared this yesterday.
...who wants to be a 70s rock star. I think the guy with the 70s hair will probably win.
Oops.
Which is another, you know, nothing in American Idol has any effect on anything because music isn't important anymore. It's not a cultural phenomenon that has any effect on the culture. The days when music is an important thing to know in order to understand what's going on in the world are past. That was a long time ago. Actually, and that's too bad for me because I love music so much. I certainly don't have any fondness at all for the concept of American Idol or Ted Mack Amateur Hour or Arthur Godfrey or whatever that show is. We have the Star Wars thing, Revenge of the Sith. All right, now I don't go to those things. I was already too old when they started, so I'm ancient today. But I wish somebody would explain to me why people think these films are supposed to be so good. I watched or tried to watch the television showing of Attack of the Clones on Sunday night, and it was impossible. It was too silly. It was too meaningless. A bunch of characters talking around with computer-morphed puppets who have awful voices. Well, that wasn't very interesting. And the design of the future seemed to be quite dull too, and I'd seen the whatever they call it, the fourth one or the whatever, the more recent new ones, and I couldn't believe that one. It was pitifully dull. I can't imagine Revenge of the Sith is any better. I mean, at least the first three Star Wars movies had technical innovation on their side, but we've had technical innovation perfected back when Spielberg did Jurassic Park. So the fact that they can do all kinds of technical marvels means absolutely nothing, because that's all they do nowadays. Oh boy, some geek with a computer can make images look better than they've ever looked. So nowadays I run into people who actually say things like, well, I don't even watch movies that are more than 10 years old because they're so old-fashioned. Or you know, try to teach a 20-year-old today to watch a black-and-white movie without explaining everything about it to them. And black-and-white, there's this Sin City movie, which fortunately didn't do very well. It was expected to be this huge, gigantic hit, and I guess it's made a profit, but it would have to make a profit. It was made so cheaply for considering what it was. And I, Frank Miller, who is listed as co-director on this film, I read The Dark Knight back in the 80s, and I thought The Dark Knight was a pretty neat story, but the fact is he's so politically conservative. He believes in that the individual is the important thing. He believes in supermen. He believes that there are men who are more superior to anybody else. That's fascist, okay? That's a fascist ideology. And his whole approach is so deeply ingrained conservative that I haven't seen Sin City. I'm not going to go crap like that. But I imagine, and I'm probably correct in this, that all the women are whores, or there must be a nun or something running around too, and all the men scowl and look really tough all the time while they blow people up in a comic book landscape based on a comic book. Whoopee. I don't care if it's good. I don't care if it's technically, you know, cool. I don't care. The fact that Robert Rodriguez said things like, we never had so much fun making a movie. Well, making art isn't about fun. Making art is about making a point. Making art, you know, yes, it can be about making money because that's part of what it is. It's part of the commerce of the workplace. But the ideology behind it is dead. It's old-fashioned and dead. Doesn't deserve to be exhumed.
We need an art that can teach us things that we don't know about. We need an art that offers us alternatives to the way things are, not a restatement of the same theme. But of course, these people don't even know what ideology is. They don't even know that the culture is ingrained with an ideology that's been there longer than they have, and that if they're going to do anything radical, it's not going to come through technical innovation. It's going to come through rethinking the process by examining the ideology in order to move on. And that's not what we're getting with an art form. On the television world, I was very fond this season of this show, 24, Kiefer Sutherland's TV show. And I'm fond of it because, though it may not have offered alternatives, it certainly displayed a real sense of the horror of the world we're in today. The terrorists in 24, now those are good terrorists. They're not, you know, hit-and-miss idiots like the Al-Qaeda people. These people, in one 24-hour period, set off, have nuclear power plants erupt, killing thousands and thousands of people. They shoot down the president's Air Force One, and they launch a nuclear missile against Los Angeles, all in 24 hours. The Al-Qaeda and all these other, the Taliban, these people, most they can do is pull a few box cutters on an airplane. Of course, you know, we still aren't getting questions about that. So the terrorists in 24, now that's the kind of terrorists that we have to be afraid of. Culture wars go on and on and on. I don't know. I thought I'd give some notes about this. Remember, only you can prevent culture boredom.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercials. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
I hope pearly white teeth fall out of the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end. And nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats to survive. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution
comes. When the revolution comes, guns and rifles will be taking the place of poems and essays. Black cultural centers will be forts supplying the revolutionaries with food and arms when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, white death will fall off the walls of museums and churches, breaking the lie that enslaved our mothers. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jesus Christ is going to be standing on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 125th Street, trying to catch the first gypsy cab out of Harlem. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jew merchants will give away matzo balls and gefilte fish to anyone they see with an afro. Frank Schiffman will give away the Apollo to the first person he sees wearing a blue dashiki. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Afros are going to be trying to straighten their heads. And straightened heads are going to be trying to wear afros when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. But until then, you know and I know niggas will party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party. Some might even die before the revolution comes.
Of course, those are the last Poets from their first album, When the Revolution Comes. And that's it for May 26th, Thursday, Impressionistic News Hour. As I said earlier, more proudly than ever, I'm glad to say I'm your faithless host.
So I hope you got something out of today's show. That's what I do it for, so you can. And please communicate. Killroom at killradio.org. I'll get right back to you if you're right. Argue with me. Tell me how fucked up I am. Or agree. Or tell me you missed the first part of it. Anyway, thanks to Kill Radio for letting me do this. Thanks to radioforall.net for being there. I'm going to post this shortly. And for Upstart Radio, who replays this on Saturday evening, you can find Upstart Radio with a quick search. And, of course, don't forget my music show, The Chill Room, which is Saturday nights at midnight Pacific Standard Time. In the meantime, we're done for now. But Kill Radio keeps going on and on and on. Hey, I'm live right now, but the next time you hear this, it'll just be a recording. Will you know the difference? I think you will. Because you're so smart and good looking. Thanks for listening to Kill Radio. Don't forget to kill your friends.